The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We are halfway through the Tuesday, June the 6th show, 79th anniversary of D-Day. A brief thank you, but heartfelt one to all those that helped save the planet Earth from the scourge that was the Nazis and the fascists just 79 years ago. That effort was launched in earnest through Operation Overlord. Thank you for that. Hey, we've had a robust conversation. Some great phone calls. Chris was such an interesting phone call, and a bunch of texts that have come in on this particular topic. And what we talked about in the last hour was this movement of 1,000 to 2,000 people. We have no idea how many come from out of state, but that was part of the story, to land at the Capitol to talk about the governor exercising powers he doesn't have. And what they've asked for is that he is going to, by executive order, make everybody bulletproof. No, I'm kidding. It was an executive order to ask him to outlaw all firearms and have a mandatory buyback. Good conversation with that. This sort of dovetails into that in a way. There is an interesting story out of Florida about something that took place. It started as a disagreement over where kids were playing. Billy, you've got sound on that.
That's right, Stuart. The sheriff is saying that the victims in this case, some of the victims' children, witnessed exactly what happened on Friday night, and he says their information is very important to this investigation, but he wants to make sure the process of getting that information is very delicate and methodical.
Her children ran to my house, banging on the door, asking for us to call the police that their mother was shot.
It was around 9 in the evening Friday, kids playing across from their home on 107th Lane in Marion County, and a neighbor reportedly had an issue with where they were.
She has called the cops just for them playing. She calls them names.
On Friday, whatever happened between the neighbor and the children, it led the children's mother, A.G.K. Owens, to the woman's door.
Whether it be banging on the doors, banging on the walls, and threats being made. And then at that moment is then when Ms. Owens was shot through the door.
The sheriff stressing his agency has more facts to gather. Also elevating the stress of the moment, items reportedly thrown at the kids, skates, according to the sheriff.
It was a pair of skates that was thrown at the children.
A family friend says Owens was going to retrieve an iPad left behind by one of the kids.
The mother went to get the iPad and you shoot her? Who does that?
She wants investigators to act.
Charge her. You know who did it. Charge her.
I wish our shooter would have called us instead of taking actions into her own hands.
The sheriff adding they have more investigative work to do.
And what we have to rule out is whether the deadly force was justified or not before we can even make the arrest.
Also at the briefing, local community leaders asking for patience.
We'd like to get to the crux of the matter as to what happened. We'd like to calm all emotions that are running through the community and let law enforcement and our legal system play it out.
And the sheriff says he wants to assemble specialists who deal with juvenile victims. He wants to make sure that before they do any detailed questioning, that those children are put at ease. Reporting live in Marion County, Dave McDaniel, West 2 News.
In Florida, there's a statute. You've heard it called the Stand Your Ground statute. I'll read to you the part that's applicable here. It's 776.012. If you wanted to look it up, use or threatened use of force in defense of person. Subsection 1 doesn't apply because it's about someone who uses less than lethal force. Here's how it reads. A person is justified in using or threatening to use deadly force if he or she, I think they're going to have to amend it now to say or they, reasonably believe that using, threatening to use such force is necessary to prevent, listen to this, imminent death or great bodily harm to himself or herself or another, or to prevent the imminent commission of a forcible felony. A person who uses or threatens to use deadly force in accordance with this subsection does not have a duty to retreat and has the right to stand his or her ground, there's that language, if the person using or threatening to use the deadly force is not engaged in a criminal activity and is in a place where he or she has the right to be. Now, that's not quite the Make My Day law. We provide special protection for inside a dwelling, but you can see how broadly that's written. The stand your ground provision, by the way, we don't have that language in Colorado, but there is no duty to retreat. We didn't need words to say you don't have a duty to retreat. Ours is a much different, more objective standard of reasonableness that applies in all the situations, except in your home, where I got to tell you, the bar is much lower than that. But here, it looks like whatever this dispute was, and Billy, am I missing this here, or did this woman shoot through the door at a person outside of her home?
Yeah, the door, according to what I've read, is the door was both closed and locked. And the person, they were yelling at each other through the closed door, and the woman on the inside had a firearm and shot through the door, killing the woman, the mother, outside of the door, and her 9-year-old son was standing right next to her.
Good God. Now, see, it's stories like this that fuel the 1,000 to 2,000 people from in and out of state showing up around the Capitol, because this seems like a ridiculous use of deadly force. Now, I don't want to be misheard here. Can I conceive of a time where someone would shoot through a door to kill someone who's trying to break in to harm them? Yes, I can. Absolutely. There's no requirement in the law that you have to wait until an inch before your life is taken or before you're beaten to use force. That is not at all what I'm saying. I mean, if you saw a car pull up and a bunch of thugs roll out and they start coming in, start banging in on the door, trying to break in, you don't have to just call 911 and then go cower in the basement until they show up and then shoot them. I'm not telling you that. I'm saying it's different here in this situation. I don't know what words were spoken. Again, this woman doesn't have a duty to retreat, although she certainly sounds like she had some options. I don't know what words were spoken, and that matters. But a woman pounding on the door, screaming at her, saying all sorts of things, my guess is probably saying, get out here, I probably want to put a beat down on you or something. I don't know, or you're a jerk or whatever it is. I'm not sure that any of those words rise to the level of shooting someone through the door. And it makes me think of, and Billy, you've got a much better memory than I do, probably because of the snakes, but what was that case we talked about? And I think it was out of Missouri, but there was that old man at his door and the African-American kid showed up to pick up his brother, but he picked the house next door by mistake. And this guy came out and shot him not once, but twice, once when he was on the ground. Was that Missouri?
Yeah, that is. I believe so. I believe that was Missouri.
Yeah. And that cat's being prosecuted as well, too. That shooter's being prosecuted also for this. This is the kind of use of firearms that makes people, I think, reasonable people who are not as strongly committed to the Second Amendment sit back and think, you know what? Maybe there are too many guns. Maybe they're too easily accessible by people who are too stupid. Maybe we need to have some sort of training or classes for firearms. When you hear of a story like this, really who the victim is dictates whether or not you think the action was appropriate. And I'll give you an example. Had this person at the front door been armed, even if the other person on the other side didn't know it, had they been holding a gun or a knife or a bat or something like that, and I don't think they were because that's not in the story, but if they had, we would go, oh, my gosh, well, this woman saved her own life because she shot a would-be attacker through the front door. Or if even that the guy that just took two shots at that kid, the African-American kid, once while he was on the ground, which makes no sense to me. I'm not really sure what was going on there. I imagine that's going to end up being a big part of the prosecution. But if that kid had not, instead of going to the wrong house to pick up his brother, had instead been there to burglarize the home, we'd have a different opinion about the same behavior. The problem is these people pulling the trigger don't know. And the question, I think, has to be, how much ignorance will the law permit before you can use lethal force? I mean, if you're just acting on the quote-unquote reasonableness of the situation, how do you deal with this? I mean, when you hear about this case from the Florida woman, I'm interested in knowing, do you think to yourself, I see how she could get to that point, I don't think this was a crime? Or do you look at this and say, maybe we're too trigger happy. Maybe, and by we, I don't mean everybody. Maybe there are some folks out there who are just too trigger happy. I really appreciated Chris's call before, but Chris says, I want to see us have some training for the use of firearms before people get them. And I got to tell you, folks, the majority of Americans feel like that would be a good intervention. Here's where I'm analyzing this from a constitutional standpoint. You have a Second Amendment right to possess firearms. You do not have a right to drive. You have a privilege to drive in the state of Colorado on our public roads and all that other stuff. So in the privilege setting, I get it. I get the idea that government can come in and say, here are the conditions upon which you can exercise this privilege. You have to be this age. You have to have this many hours of driving. You have to have insurance. I can see all of those things. It is tougher, not from a common sense standpoint, but from a legal standpoint, to conceive of the government conditioning your exercise of a constitutional right based on some other government-created education piece. And I'll give you a couple of other examples. For the First Amendment, nobody says you have to be approved by the government to start a newspaper or a podcast. Airwaves like we have right here on 710 KNUS, a little bit different because there's such a limited number of potential stations on the spectrum, and Billy knows way more about this than I do, that the government intervenes here for that reason, and that is to make sure that the competition over information doesn't create an environment where ain't nobody getting signals anyhow. So I see that as a little bit different. But you can start up a newspaper in your garage right now, and the government can't stop you from doing it. And remember, the First Amendment, too, isn't about getting permission. It's about getting forgiveness. So we have this prior restraint doctrine, and we've seen it play out with the Pentagon Papers, you know, Sullivan v. New York Times, all that stuff, where the Supreme Court came down and said, we value the First Amendment so much that we would rather you sue a newspaper for something they did wrong than tell them they can't publish it. The Second Amendment is the one right next door. It's the Second Amendment, right? That one right there, to condition the exercise of the Second Amendment on some other type of permission from the government, that's a tough one for me to overcome legally. From a common sense perspective, I got to be honest with you, there are so many morons out there who make decisions with things like their cars that I think to myself, do we want to put in their hands something that could take a life, you know, a neighborhood away? I get it. I understand. But the Constitution doesn't create that. I'm not saying there can't be limitations, but it doesn't create that. And this is that kind of situation. So where do you come down on this? 303-696-1971. When you hear a story like this, and like the dude out of Missouri who shot that African-American kid not once but twice in front of his house before ever saying boo, do you look at that and say, that is just a risk we're going to have to take if we're going to have a Second Amendment? Or are there other things you would do to address that? First off, you have to hold them accountable, right? They're each going to defend on the grounds of self-defense on Missouri's and Florida's laws. Of course they're going to do that. I'm just not sure I can imagine how that's successful. I guess I can't imagine how that's successful. But if that's successful, are we better off? If those two people walk away having shot two people for all the wrong reasons, is that an acceptable outcome for us? Do we just shrug and say this is the price of freedom? This is the price of the Second Amendment? 303-696-1971. Here's some texts that have come in. Felons with violent past or anything above a class 6 felony, no firearms. I agree with George. Well, let's be clear. First off, I agree with every part of that except the part about anything above a class 6 felony, because there are some class 5 felonies that are still low-level, non-violent crimes that I can see, let's say some sort of internet hacking. I'm making that up, but some sort of computer crime that rises to the level of a felony. That person gets convicted, and they should be, and they serve their sentence. Should that person be deprived of the ability to possess firearms? I don't know. And that to me doesn't, that person doesn't pose any more risk before the conviction than they do after the conviction. But for a lot of those felonies, and I agree with the texter here, for a lot of those felonies, yes, please, you should not possess firearms because your judgment is so freaking horrible. Why would we go down that road? Here's another one. Someone texted in. Oh, I think this is, I'm going to have to read this when I get a break, texter, but it says, family member of mine, uncle, thank you for sharing that. In the 1960s, George, my mother protected my younger sisters and myself from escaped men from the correctional facility on the Western Slope. My mother knew where my father kept his army Colt. She got it out of the closet and walked out into the hall, shot above the door jamb, and she told him, she said, the next one will be right at you. They took off running. If my mother didn't know how to shoot that pistol, we could have all been dead. My sisters and I, from the age of 14 years old, were trained to shoot every firearm my father owned. First off, thank you for sharing that. That's an incredible story. I'm of the same mind. And now, Texter, you make me feel a little bit guilty here because I took Amanda and Trey to the Centennial gun place for weapons familiarization. God, years ago. I think they might have been in middle school. And I have not yet done the same thing for Graham and Jeff, and they're going to be in eighth grade and a sophomore. I need to do that. I want to take them out there and get that is a very good point. But let me ask you, Texter, in light of that, do you then advocate for some sort of weapons training and law familiarization before allowing someone to get a firearm, before you allow them to exercise their Second Amendment right? Here's another one. Another text. The government can't do immigration, spending, health care, especially Veterans Administration, and homelessness effectively. Since the government can't handle those matters correctly, I don't for one second believe the government will be able to keep guns out of the hands of criminals. Well, listen, you bring up a couple good points there, Texter. One is the government doesn't really do much of anything very well, with one exception. We tend to make war pretty well. But in no way am I telling you that the military is run efficiently at all. It is not. And that just goes to prove the point that you're making, which is the government ain't good at a lot of what it does, but what it does out of necessity. Like, we could have a much more leaner and probably an even more effective military at some level if we privatized it. But I can't imagine a single American advocating for a military that isn't beholden to the Constitution by way of oath rather than whoever else might write their paycheck to some other corporation or private entity. I wouldn't tolerate that. I wouldn't. Same thing with a police force or a sheriff's office. I want them to answer to you and me. So we accept a certain amount of inefficiency. The question here is, and I think the texter raises this, is how can we expect the government to protect us through laws that just prohibit criminals from possessing firearms? I don't know that we can, texter, 100%. But I don't like the idea of just simply throwing up our hands and saying that you and I, who have lived law-abiding lives, we're going to be able to have access to firearms, even though our judgment's never been tested and found to be wanton and missing in some cases and frankly wrong. But these convicted felons, these drug dealers and these car thieves and others, we can trust their judgment because they've served their sentence. I don't get that. And I'm still waiting for anybody to pick up the phone and call me at 303-696-1971 and convince me, or at least try to debate me, on the fact that drug dealers and convicted drug dealers and car thieves should have their rights to firearms restored. Do you agree with RMGO and Phil Weiser, or do you agree with common sense and the idea of public safety? 303-696-1971. Here's another text. Freedom is dangerous. Yeah, I think that's the other thing, is folks start thinking in terms of slippery slope, and they start thinking in terms of, well, if all we're thinking about is how to save that next life or how to save 10 lives or just 100 lives, there's no limit to the kinds of laws we can put in place that would limit our freedoms. I agree with that. I don't know if it's a slippery slope argument, but I get why that has traction, because every time they put another law in place, as ineffective as they are, this kind of stuff happens, and we end up having more debates on this. There was one other thing I was going to leave you with. I should have done this right when we came back, because it's in response to these 1,000 to 2,000 in and out of state women showing up. There's some CDC studies. There's some other information that's put out there about the number of kids and the percentage that are killed by firearms. And no doubt it is an unacceptable number, but they talk about these three different groups of people, ages, I think it's 1 to 5, or infant to 5, 6 to 11, and 12 to 17. And here are the numbers. It says older children and teens are much more likely, this is Pew Research, than younger kids to be killed in gun-related incidents. Those 12 to 17 accounted for 86% of all gun deaths. Now, I'm not going to say the source yet, but all gun deaths. While those 6 to 11 accounted for only 7% of the total, as did those 5 and under. Still, there were 179 gun deaths among children 6 to 11 and 184 among those under age 5 in 2021. And here's the other language. For all three age groups, homicide was the leading type of gun death in 2021. But suicides accounted for a significant share, 36% of gun deaths amongst those ages 12 to 17, while accidents accounted for a sizable share, 34% of gun deaths among those 5 and under. That tells you more than a third of the deaths between 12 and 17 were suicides, and more than a third of the deaths 5 and under were by accident. Obviously, there's a bunch of questions there. Like, two-thirds of the gun deaths for 5 and under were not accident? Well, they probably weren't suicide either, right? 5-year-olds ain't killing themselves. That means two-thirds of the death 5 and under were homicides? I'm sorry, man, but if you're going to kill a child, whether or not you have a gun isn't going to prevent you from doing it. The other statistic, and I'm still looking for this here, is that the fake numbers that are used by the extreme gun control people incorporate, under the caption adolescents or young adults, ages 18 and 19. When you do that, you blow up the numbers because those adults are committing a ton of the suicides and a ton of the violent crimes. But I'm still looking for that number. Listen, the question I want to ask is this Florida thing, when someone shoots through the door and shoots someone, or the Missouri guy, when he shoots that young African-American kid twice, what do those do to your sense of the Second Amendment? Do you just shrug and say, hey, that's the price, we should just prosecute them and move on? Or are there other steps that you would take? Certainly not what the women at the Capitol have done, but what would you do? 303-696-1971. You can hit us on the text. You can also hit us on the Rumble as well. It's George Brockett on The George Show. You're listening to 710 KNUS. At 710 KNUS, we're still talking about some guns with a different angle of this thing. One thing I forgot to share with you, too, and we'll get to Jacqueline from Nebraska and the others calling in at 303-696-1971 in a moment. I found that thing I was referencing with the 1,000 to 2,000 in and out of state women showing up here. It was, it says the protest was, this is out of the Democrat Post story. The protest was organized by the newly formed Here for the Kids organization, a national group founded by two women of color who have called for only white women to participate in the first protest in Colorado. They've asked people of color and those with disabilities. So I guess if you're a white woman with disabilities, you don't get to be part of this either, to instead participate in a remote campaign. Here's the quote. While acknowledging everyone's agency, oh, I don't even know what that means. Here for the Kids respectfully asks white women to put their bodies on the ground, as marginalized communities have always done and continued to do. Historically, white women are least likely to be brutalized by the police. Their multiple intersections of privilege and power support the movement as they participate in an act of civil disobedience, occupy physical space, and demand change. I may have just spit up in my mouth a little bit there reading that. Unbelievable. But that I knew it was out there. I just wanted to find it for you. That was in the Democratic Post. You can check that out. We have a caller on the line. It's Jacqueline from Nebraska. Great listener, great caller. Jacqueline, what do you think about all this?
Well, that speech you just read just about makes me want to throw up. I'm telling you, a decent white woman isn't going to listen to that crap. But that's not why I called. I called about the firearm issue. Over the years, I've bought firearms in the Denver area, and you know, they've always asked me what kind of handgun I wanted. They usually have a shooting range downstairs. You shoot the different pistols, you see which one works best for you, and they've always done that. But when we were kids, George, we did not have that luxury. We did not have training camps that you go to learn how to shoot. It was my dad's responsibility. And he took that responsibility seriously. Now, I'm telling you what, I've always said this, and I do. You know, if a kid does a crime, the parents does the time. And that's the way it was when we were kids. I can't imagine going home and having the sheriff show up.
Back up a little bit. In the past, you think that parents were locked up for when their kids did bad?
No, they weren't. Well, they were responsible for their kids financially and legally. And when I had children, George, my children, yeah. I was responsible for. It hasn't changed. You're responsible for your sons, your daughter. If they do a crime, it's going to come back on the parent. It always belongs back in the home. It doesn't belong at the schools. It doesn't belong down at Walmart. It belongs with mom and dad. And if you bring those parents in and you show them these different things that they're responsible, it used to be a public, I mean, it was just public knowledge. You're responsible for the children that you give birth to. Now, it's changed, I guess, because they want the schools and then they want law enforcement and they want these special interest groups to raise their kids. I'm telling you, we talked about this old guy back east that shot the young boy through the door.
Was that, you know, was that George, Missouri? I'm pretty sure it was Missouri. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, George, I'm not so sure I wouldn't have done the same thing.
Really?
You know, I'm an older woman. I'll tell you one thing. I would tell him I've got a gun. That's one thing I'd let him know.
Okay.
They have the opportunity to run.
Right there, Jacqueline, that's a huge distinction. Because in that circumstance, you can picture this kid who thinks he's shown up at a house where his brother's hanging out with some friends, knocks on the door, tries the door, and hears, I have a gun. I'm pretty sure that kid moves on or is like, oh, my God, I'm just here to get my brother or something. Just what you described right there, that is a reasonable response from someone who is a longtime gun owner. You see the distinction there.
Yes, and see, I feel kind of bad for this old guy because I'm telling you, he must have been scared or panicked. He had to have felt some kind of panic to have went ahead and shot without warning. You know, my dad used to say, you know, wait
twice,
till you see the white.
Jacqueline, he did it twice, though. He shot the kid when he was on the ground.
Yeah, see, now that I don't understand. And you have to be responsible. I think everyone should have gun training. But there you go again. We have the right to bear arms. We have the
right
to firearms. And they don't have the right to know what you have and where you have it or where you keep it.
Yeah, true.
I don't believe that they do.
Do you feel, based on the description that we played off of that story, do you feel for the woman in Florida who shot that other mom through the door in front of her 9-year-old kid? Do you have that same sense? Like, I kind of get it? Or are you like, dang, man. I mean, you can't solve every issue or every act of fear can't be answered with a bullet.
It can't. And I haven't heard all of that other than the fact that did she warn that woman that she had a firearm?
Great question. What we don't know, and I agree with you that these are pivotal issues. What did she say on her side of the door before she pulled the trigger? And frankly, what did the other woman on the other side of the door say? I mean, if she's pounding on the door in a not just a hard knock, I'm talking like an aggressive pounding on the door, like I'm coming through the door, followed by I'm going to beat your blank or whatever. Short of something like that, I don't get it. I don't get how you get to go to guns.
Well, I don't either. You know, I'm an older woman. I live by myself. And I think I've told you this before. There is an older woman in this area here that doesn't have a shotgun behind every door. We live in an area out here that's rural. And when we see strangers, we take it seriously because we know everyone out here. We know who these people are. So if you're coming to my door, and I don't care what color you are, and you're in a carload of kids or anything else, I mean, you're going to get my attention. And so I am smart enough to say.
Well, what does that mean, though? What do you do when they get your attention?
Well, I'm going to let them know. I want to know who they are and why they're there. If they don't answer, then I'm going to tell them.
And this is if they're in the neighborhood or if they come to your door? I mean, what are the circumstances?
If they come to my door, and you know, we have a pretty good neighbor watch here. Everyone kind of looks out for other people. But, you know, I take that seriously because I've lived in Denver and I've lived in larger cities. And, it's getting now to the point where people are panicking and they're scared. If they see something new out of their area that they don't know, they're willing to protect themselves. They want to do that right away. I can't say that I wouldn't want to do that either, but I sure as hell would tell them I have a gun.
And that's what separates you, I think, at least from the dude that we know of from Missouri and maybe even this woman from Florida, is that you are taking that moment not just to reflect, but to give the other person information that might prevent you from pulling the trigger. Do you feel like, Jacqueline, we're in an environment now where because of the crime and the fear and everything gets hyped up and all, that we are more likely to simply pull the trigger in sort of an almost knee-jerk reaction to fear than we are to say, hang on, what I'm about to do may end a life, maybe justifiably, but it's still going to end a life. Do you feel like we're at a place where we just pull the trigger more frivolously now?
Well, I think we are getting into a place where people are becoming more and more afraid. I am the one who texted you about my mother in the the two guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That was a great text. Yeah,
this
you.
Was in the 1960s. And I'll tell you, Mom was from England. She grew up, went to World War II over there. She knew about a lot of stuff we didn't know about. Up till that point, George, I didn't know my father had firearms. We never saw them. My mother did, and she knew where to find them. And as I grew up, I was very careful with a lot of things. My children had firearm training. They take it very seriously, as I do. It's a privilege to have a gun.
Maybe that's it, though, Jacqueline. Right. Maybe the training that you had from your very responsible parents was the kind of thing that put you in a position to more responsibly exercise your Second Amendment rights. And if that's true, is that the kind of thing that we should encourage through legislation for everyone else? Or do we simply say, well, here's a best practice, but frankly, if you just want to be a moron and go get whatever you want and use it in whatever situation, we're good with that?
Well, I do think that anyone who gets a firearm should know how to use it before they walk out the store. And I think it's apparent if you're going to give your son or daughter a firearm, you better show responsibility and show them how to use it, what it's for. And I think a lot of people don't. I think that shooting back east, didn't that young boy when he shut up that school and killed up at the Sandy Hook?
Oh, yeah.
His father bought him the firearm, and he was he had mental issues. He had already had problems.
I don't remember the role his father played, Jacqueline, but I do remember his mom. I think it was his mom who he ended up taking the rifle from her house and shooting her up first and then going and killing all those sweet little babies. I think that's how that went down.
His father signed for him to get the firearm.
Oh, did he?
And so, you know, what are you going to do? Like I say, it goes back to the home, back to the parents, all this crime and everything else, everything we're learning, we're seeing, we're hearing. You know, where's the parents here? I mean, you can't. What do you do with a 12-year-old that goes out and shoots up somebody?
Parents, yes, but remember I believe me, I understand what you're saying, Jacqueline. But for purposes of this piece of the conversation that we've been having, we're talking about two adults, right? We're talking about the old guy in I think Missouri and the other adult woman in Florida who went to guns right at their doorway over a fear. Whether that fear was objectively reasonable or not, I imagine, is going to be what the court case is about. I think the other part of the Florida story, by the way, is just the poor response time by the sheriff's office and even getting out there and then investigating the case. But so this isn't about the kids. This is about those adults.
Yeah, it is. I don't know how many of these cases are out there, George, but there's more juvenile crime than there are older people like this shooting. And I would want to know what that woman in Florida was doing. I want to know exactly what the circumstances to that was. But I'll tell you, a 12-year-old running around in a car with his older brothers, mom and dad better be somewhere. If I had a 12-year-old, and I did, I knew where he was at every single second of the day. And if he'd have done something like that, George, he better pray to God that the sheriff got him before I did, because he had to come home to me sooner or later. And you don't do anything that shames your parents. That's one thing I've learned.
Great point, Jacqueline. Yeah, really a great point. And thank you for the call. Thanks for always listening. I appreciate the input on that. I think there's a lot of folks out there that have that same experience where parents were responsible with them. We never owned any firearms when I was a kid, at least that I'm aware of, and maybe that's the point. We did have this sort of dirty, hairy 44 Magnum-looking pellet gun. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And it had these little CO2 cartridges, and I would try to shoot holes in these cans and stuff like that. But, you know, other than the safety related to that, which was know what's beyond your target and stuff that my dad taught, we never sat down and had a formal discussion about firearms. My first exposure to real firearms was with Uncle Sammy, you know, when I stuck up my hand back at age 18. And, man, they put the real deal right in your hands. We didn't start with a .22. You started with a .223, 5.56 millimeter at the time, M16A2. And I still remember the training because they beat this into your head, the cyclic rate of fire, the maximum effective range of 460 meters, how the bullet tumbled. I mean, all that other stuff. I remember all of that pretty vividly. And I do think that the education piece is real. Look what I want to do. There's text coming in here, and you can keep those going. I'll look at the Rumble as well. But I'd really rather have the conversation with you. 303-696-1971. Have another segment left on this topic. Stick around. George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
On Friday, whatever happened between the neighbor and the children, it led the children's mother, Ajike Owens, to the woman's door.
Whether it be banging on the doors, banging on the walls, and threats being made. And then at that moment is then when Ms. Owens was shot through.
George Brocker back with you, your final segment of 710 KNUS for this particular hour. That's the sound of the incident that we've been talking about. Broader terms than that, but at the end of the day, listen, you can think this person was wrong, and I tend to, absent some other evidence here, going to guns in a closed locked door when someone's on the outside after a dispute over kids and where they're playing, even if she's pounding on the door, I think is ridiculous. Unless we know more facts about what was said and done, it sounds ridiculous to me. But if you agree that it's wrong, there's only two directions we can go here. Well, there's one, we can prosecute the person and hold them accountable, and I'd love to know if you think that's real. But two is, do we do anything about this? Is there any change in the law that would help address this or the old dude that shot up the African-American kid in Missouri? Or is this just the price of freedom? Is this just the price of the Second Amendment, 303-696-1971? Here's some text before we get to Robert. We not only have the right to firearms, we have the right to self-preservation against anyone threatening your life, foreign or domestic. It is a natural right given by God, not man or woman. Well, I agree with self-defense and defense of others, even though we actually need it to be codified in the law if you're going to want to be able to be protected from prosecution. But does this sound like that? I mean, and it's not like someone walks up to you on the street and says, hey, I hate your guts, and by the way, I'd love to see you die, and then you pull out a gun and shoot him. That's just not how it works. It can't just be anybody threatening your life, someone on social media, and this has happened. I wish you were dead. You're a horrible person. You would be better off underground, whatever those horrible things are. Or I wish an assassin would take. Those are threats of a kind. You can't just then go find that person and shoot them. There has to be some objective standard of reasonableness and imminence if any of this stuff is going to make sense. But I do agree with you that the right to self-defense, although codified, is one that is a natural right. It's at the protest that's happening in front of the Capitol right now. I'd estimate there are, here's someone, I estimate there are 60 to 80 people there so far, mostly white women from what I could see. They're definitely trying to take up space and look intimidating. They have a photographer and videographer there. Here's another one. Education, not legislation. Quote from Thomas Jefferson, I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. Robert, you're on 710 KMS. What do you think?
Hey, so how you doing? Good. Great topic, by the way. I always kind of get in trouble with this topic because as kids, I mean, I'm from Mexico, so we got here in 79. My mom was, you know, she had to work two jobs. Sometimes it was 12 to 14 hours a day. Yes. And we were home alone. We were home alone, you know, in what used to be, you know, West Denver, the downtown area. And, I mean, there was a lot of gangs. There still is, actually. And like I said, my mom was hardly ever around. I mean, when a parent can give advice to a kid, I mean, it's up to the kid whether he does good or not. And we didn't have that parent. But my dad died when I was 5 years old. But like I said, as far as I can say, I never did anything that changed anybody's life, like killed somebody or
Robert,
even thought
of killing somebody. Do you own firearms?
Yes, I do.
Do you, when you look at these two cases, the one out of Missouri we covered a while ago and the one in Florida from the other day, when you look at those, do you think, hey, that's just the price of the Second Amendment? Or do you think, man, those people are crazy and they're hurting the cause? They're hurting the cause for Second Amendment when they exercise their use of deadly force that way.
I think they're crazy.
is there anything, given your background and your experience growing up, is there anything you'd want to see change? I mean, can you envision a law that would either mandate some sort of training or familiarity or something as a gatekeeper to having access to firearms?
You know, I think training is important because I'll tell you what, my first child, he's now 45. I'm sorry, he's 38 years old. You know, he used to be, he was on the courts to be, you know, let's say a bad child. And he used to like to shoot things with BB guns I took him to the range like 3 or 4 times and shot him. I mean, taught him how to what a gun is actually for.
Yeah.
And after that, he gained respect for the firearm.
Well, see, that's a great story too, Robert. That's a great story that when a parent or somebody in authority got him in a position to learn stuff and to appreciate what he was doing, his treatment of that thing changed. So is this just something that we tell parents and this is a best practice, or do we enforce it through some sort of legislation?
I mean, I would think that you would have to enforce it because, there is a lot of people that just buy guns and not know what to do with them. They don't realize what it's for. And like I said, I have five kids, and all my kids, and all five of my kids know how to shoot a gun. They know how to clean it. They know what the damage it can do. I mean, I taught them whatever I knew about firearms.
It sounds like, Robert, you have done it the right way. And what a great call to finish up this segment. Robert, thank you for that phone call. Hey, listen, we're going to change topics at the top of the hour. If you didn't get in on time, of course, I'll always take calls because we honor the callers here, 303-696-1971. But Tim Scott made an appearance on The View yesterday. Controversial? Some booing? We'll talk about it when we come next. When we come back next. George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.